from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, what the Washington Post has learned about the Trump Organization's hiring practices and treatment of workers since two housekeepers came forward a year ago to reveal that the president's company routinely hires undocumented immigrants. But first, we look at some of the major events and cultural shifts that marked the last 10 years in the Bay Area. From the Occupy movement to devastating wildfires, the triumphs of the Warriors and Giants to the ghost ship tragedy, KQED's arts and culture team has put together a 10-part series looking at our turbulent decade. That's all next on Forum. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. As we head into 2020, KQED's arts and culture digital reporting team has been reflecting deeply on the events and seismic shifts that mark the last 10 years in the Bay Area, including the housing crisis, wildfires, the gig economy, and the ghost ship tragedy. Their series released this week is called Our Turbulent Decade, and lead editor and project manager Nastya Boynovskaya joins me now. Welcome back to Forum, Nastya.
Thank you.
And congratulations on the project.
Thanks so much, Mina.
It really has been a turbulent decade. And while I mentioned some of the most difficult parts of the last 10 years at the top, your series really begins with triumph, the triumph of the Giants and the Warriors.
Yeah, we actually started the series on a high note before getting to some of those heavier topics. So it opens with a really awesome story by Ray Alexandra about how the Giants' 2010 World Series victory kicked off this incredible decade for Bay Area sports teams who were previously considered underdogs.
Yeah, I love this line from her piece where she says, it all started with a group of oddballs on the back of one of the longest losing streaks in sporting history. We actually have a cut of that moment that I'd like to play for listeners.
Here it is. Struck him out! And for the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
So talk a little bit about what that did for the region to kick off 2010, essentially.
Well, in 2010, the Giants hadn't won a World Series championship in 56 years. So their longtime fans in San Francisco, basically just went crazy after that. There were reports of people lighting trash cans on fire and just like all these all-night parties in the Mission. And then they won again in 2012 and 2014. And then right after that, in 2015, the Warriors won their first NBA championship in 40 years. So that was also a huge payoff for their fans who had watched them through decades of them, you know, not being the greatest team and really, really being loyal to them. And I think it really gave the Bay Area this very triumphant feeling that unfortunately, with the Warriors recently leaving Oakland, kind of seemed to taper off by the end of the decade.
Well, and also the other unfortunate thing that you point out in your series is how Bay Area sports couldn't help but be impacted by the economic shifts of these last 10 years. So that really seems to be the undercurrent of this project, this sense of how inequality really defined and impacted this region.
Right, because although this is a culture series, I think that really polarized wealth inequality that we've seen happen in the Bay Area over the last 10 years really impacted all realms of life, including sports, you know, with now the Warriors being in San Francisco and some of their longtime fans who are, might be more working class and from the East Bay feeling kind of shut out of their recent success. And then also across, you know, all the arts production happening in the Bay Area, artists feeling squeezed out by the high prices and tragedies like ghost ship as well.
So was this really kind of the overarching principle that guided this project?
You know, when I came up with the series, I don't think that was a conscious thing. But as we started coming up with the most significant moments that shaped life in the Bay Area this decade, that theme just kept popping up over and over.
Occupy, the Occupy movement It was definitely a major moment for the region in terms of highlighting just how dramatic economic inequality became and was continuing to be an issue in the region. And could you just talk about how Oakland, even though this all happened in Zuccotti Park in New York initially, really became almost like the West Coast outpost for Occupy?
Yeah. Well, Oakland has this incredible history of political activism. And even in the years before Occupy, there were already mass demonstrations calling for justice for Oscar Grant. So that kind of really lent itself to the momentum of when the Occupy movement started and different outposts of it started springing up across the country. And I think Oaklanders really showed up in force. And it's funny to think about now because the cost of living in the Bay Area and in Oakland has risen so dramatically, and there has been so much more displacement than there was in 2011. But even at that time, I think, you know, people were already being squeezed by predatory evictions, and they really came together to call out the wealthy 1%.
Well, let's play a little bit of a cut from an Occupy protest. This one is from October 25th, 2011. And it also plays a little bit of police breaking up the Occupy Oakland camp.
High Street, Blue Street! High Street, Blue Street! High Street!
Regardless of your purpose, you will be in violation of Penal Code Section 409.
Hearing the sound of those projectiles reminds me of Scott Olson, the Iraq War vet who was struck and injured by a police projectile. And he's really became kind of like a galvanizing moment in the protests as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There were some really intense clashes with the protesters and law enforcement. So Penn Darvis Harshaw actually wrote that piece in the series, and he describes how after two successful shutdowns of the Port of Oakland, the protesters attempted to occupy an empty building downtown, and actually over 400 people were arrested.
I want to invite our listeners to join this conversation. I'm sure just even these couple of examples that we're bringing up is reminding them of the ups and downs of the Bay Area over this past decade. We're talking about KQED Arts Project, Our Turbulent Decade. And I want to ask you, what was the defining Bay Area event or moment for you in the last 10 years? What does hearing about these events bring up for you? What defined life in the Bay Area for you? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. We're talking with Nastya Voinovskaya. She was the lead on this project. And also, you had a whole team of people. You mentioned Penn Darvis Harshaw, who wrote about the protests in Oakland and about the Occupy movement and the impact that it had. But you yourself penned a piece, Nastya, about the police killings that also marred so much of this decade and really seemed to galvanize the community.
Yeah, so I actually wrote a piece about the Frisco 5 hunger strike that happened in San Francisco in 2016. And I chose that for this series particularly because of all the protests that happened over the course of the decade, this one had really concrete outcomes for police reform in San Francisco, although there is a really long way to go. But so on our timeline, that piece actually starts in 2015 when the San Francisco rapper Quipto ran into Mayor Ed Lee at a restaurant and he decided to call him out for his policies. You know, his tax break for tech companies on Market Street that many activists attribute to bringing this influx of wealthy residents and spurring these evictions and displacement of longtime San Francisco residents. And that coupled with, you know, the racist text message scandal that happened at SFPD in 2015, and also several police killings of Alex Nieto, Mario Woods, Luis Gongora Pat, and Amilcar Perez Lopez. And So Equipto and his mother, who's also an activist, and three other people staged one of the longest hunger strikes in San Francisco history in 2016. They were out there camped out in front of the Valencia Street Police Station for 17 days. And they also participated in many protests and marches. And shortly after the hunger strike ended, there actually tragically was another police shooting that led to the hunger strikers' main demand being met, which was Police Chief Greg Suhr resigning.
Well, we have listeners calling in, and I want to invite Arlinda in Oakland to join us. Hi, Arlinda.
Hi. I just want to correct a little piece of history here. She talked about predatory evictions in 2011. Actually, that was happening a whole decade earlier. During the dot-com boom, we had a 300% increase in evictions in Oakland due to predatory evictions. And it caused, we organized here. I brought the interfaith community on board that campaign. We got a ballot measure on the ballot. We got it passed. And we've since then, we have just cause eviction protections in Oakland, where tenants cannot be evicted if they play by the rules. They pay their rent on time. They're not a nuisance. They don't damage the property or do anything illegal on the premises.
Arlinda, thanks. And certainly you're right. These, as we've learned over this decade, so much of this, so much of the signs and so much of the activism was also happening prior to 2010. But how did the housing crisis really reach kind of fever pitch in these last 10 years, Nasia?
Starting in about, I believe, either 2011 or 2012 was when we saw this dramatic rate of skyrocketing rents. And up until then, rents had definitely been rising and there were predatory evictions. But the data kind of shows that that was a starting point of a trend that's ongoing today. And I believe I read a statistic. I'm not sure if I have the numbers exactly correct, but around 2012, someone making $100K in the Bay Area could afford to live in 80% of the Bay Area. And now it's much, much lower, I believe, like under 30%. So that just shows how inaccessible the prices have become.
And KQED reporter Sarah Hotchkiss also wrote about the exodus of working class folks and of artists in the region.
Yes. Yeah, so her piece in the series starts in 2013 when the SF MoMA closes for a temporary remodel. So around that time, that's also really when that trend of the rising rents starts to increase dramatically. So at that point, also, many galleries close their doors. A lot of them shut down because of 50%, 100% rent increases. And then also it became unaffordable for artists to stay in San Francisco and other parts of the Bay Area as well. And in 2015, the Arts Commission did a survey of artists, and there were several hundred respondents, and the vast majority of them said that they were in danger or had been displaced from their home, workspace, or both. The people in the art scene basically said that became the start of a shift of fine artists and especially emerging artists leaving San Francisco.
Well, let me go to our caller, Marie in Albany. Hi, Marie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My comment was regarding the ghost ship tragedy. Not only just the horrific loss of life and how that affected everybody in the underground Oakland scene, but also how that really had a huge shift, caused a huge shift in our underground music and cultural and art scene in Oakland. All of the warehouses getting shut down, all of the artists getting displaced after. I've lost countless friends who can't afford to live in Oakland anymore. And I think that was really the cultivating point of losing our art community in Oakland.
Marie, thanks for that. And I'm sorry for all those things that you've seen and witnessed and experienced over these last 10 years. I mean, displacement is so deeply intertwined. Artist displacement is so deeply intertwined with the kinds of spaces that we saw the ghost ship being.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much, Marie, for that comment. In the series, so in 2016, we have a piece by Sam Lefebvre about ghost ship, and he talks about how even prior to that, so many warehouse venues were getting shut down and evicted, and that tragedy only exacerbated things. And it's definitely been a huge cultural loss that's deeply felt in Oakland, for sure.
Yeah, really poignant in your project when the reporters were talking about the spaces as being such important sites of cultural risk and innovation, and what we don't even know that we may have lost with the loss of those spaces. The other thing that I found striking in this project was the discussion around how gentrification and displacement has actually, to some degree, watered down or weakened the protest movement as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Penn does a great job pointing that out in his Occupy piece where, with a lot of the lower income people being displaced from Oakland and San Francisco and these higher earning people coming in who may not have as much that they're angry about to protest on the streets enough about. So it comes down to something as simple as there being fewer bodies to make a movement.
Well, this listener tweets, something that defines the 2010s in the Bay Area for me has been the departure of friends and colleagues. Personally, this has particularly highlighted the economic and housing issues we've been facing over the decade. On Instagram, KQED Arts and KQED Forum have asked listeners and readers to summarize the decade in one word. And some of the things they've been saying, Nastia, revolutionary, transition, rewarding, and evolving. Kay tweets, I left the Bay Area in the beginning of the decade for more diversity and affordable rent in Los Angeles, then came back at the end to a strange land. One of the, I guess, triumphs or evolutions over the course of these 10 years that really hit kind of a high point in 2018 was the Bay Area's representation in Hollywood films. You saw Oakland and Black Panther. You saw so many incredible Sorry to Bother You by Boots Riley. Can you talk about what happened around 2018, 2019 in terms of the Bay Area and its representation out there?
Yeah, and starting in 2018, there was this incredible blitz of local films that were very well reviewed, and they portrayed the Bay Area on the Hollywood screen and this much more mainstream stage. And also what's also significant is that they really centered on stories about Black Bay Area residents. Like in with Black Panther, we have like the origin story in Oakland, and then Sorry to Bother You, Oakland is all through the background of that film. There's also Blindspotting, which is really incredible.
Oh, right.
Gin, and then this year The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Yes.
But even though this was such a climactic high point for Bay Area filmmakers, also all of them, so as Ruth Gebreyesus points out in her story about this year in film, they really felt the need to say something and make a commentary. And many of the films I just mentioned actually do have commentary about gentrification and wealth inequality. And I think it's because Bay Area filmmakers don't get this mainstream platform very often. So I think with everything going on in the region, over the last 10 years, they really seize that moment to say something.
Well, let's hear a clip from Boots Riley's Sorry to Bother You, because I think it really exemplifies what you're talking about.
Hey, hello. Mr. Davison, Cassius Green here. Sorry to bother.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm never talking about Will Smith's wife, like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regalview.
As always, we'll be getting that out to you right away.
That's from the trailer of Sorry to Bother You. It's interesting that you talk about, like, well, here, let me read Noelle's comment to you. She writes, interesting that once the Warriors moved to their fancy SF arena, they started losing. Didn't that happen to the 49ers when they moved to Santa Clara? I mean, we touched on this at the very beginning of the show, but it points to the direction that we are going in now as we enter 2020, right? So the Warriors have this fancy new place in San Francisco, Chase Center. And what does that mark? Are you optimistic or hopeful about the awareness that we've gained over the last 10 years about gentrification and its consequences?
I am hopeful about the awareness, but there also needs to be action backing that awareness to make change, I think. And in the series, we look back at some of the protest movements and their successes, and that those types of actions are still going on right now. For example, with the Moms for Housing movement in Oakland, with these mothers who were formerly homeless occupying an empty house that's actually owned by a speculative corporation and not a person. Movements like that, I think, are they give me hope about creating change and giving people opportunity. But I think also in this decade, we've raised tons of awareness about tons of different things. You know, we're always online posting about social injustices going on. But I think that there's only so much awareness that can be raised before people take action.
Well, this listener tweets, as a Napa resident, the 2014 earthquake was a major before and after marker, as well as the fires. We've been natural disaster oriented since. You do mention the Napa earthquake. And when we talk about seismic shifts, that was a literal seismic shift.
Yeah. So we don't have a full story dedicated to that, but it is mentioned in the series. But in the 2017 story, it's by Gabe Moline. And he's actually a lifelong Santa Rosa resident. And it was about the 2017 Santa Rosa wildfires and how they really brought a new level of awareness about climate change to Bay Area urban dwellers, where before, in some people's minds, maybe climate change was a far-off prospect, but the Tubbs Fire actually decimated multiple neighborhoods in Santa Rosa, and then everyone else in the Bay Area was wearing masks, you know, because of the air quality, and then we saw it again, you know, in the years that followed. So I think that really gave people a sense of urgency about climate change and how it impacts their day-to-day lives.
As the person who headed up this project, you must have spent a lot of time reflecting and remembering. And as this segment closes, I'm curious, Nastia, if what would be the one defining moment that really defined life for you in the Bay Area for this decade, personally?
Oh, shoot. That's the hardest question. I think it's so hard to narrow down with all the different things that have happened. But for me, I think all the activism that has happened, we go into different points of the series, has been what the most defining thing for me personally, because it's easy to get, you know, bummed out about all the displacement and horrible things going on. But for me, it's very heartening to see people organizing and fighting back.
Nastia Voinovskaya, music editor at KQED Arts, who headed up the KQED Arts online project, Our Turbulent Decade. You should check it out on kqed.org and stay with us for another half hour of Forum.